He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing, Melody interning. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, we are having a good morning. It's been a fun show so far. Got a little hockey in, got a little football in, got a little NFL in. Been sort of getting you all caught up over a very, very busy night in sports. But it's a busy day in Nashville, busy week in Nashville, because SEC Media Days are here for college basketball. And we wanted to sort of get an update for all of you guys, because I know many of you have not had your heads in the books on the college basketball world of the SEC. So to do that, we bring in one of our favorites. Frankly, if I was going to start a boy band, this guy would be absolutely the lead singer.
That's because he comes into town like a torrential downpour.
He does. He's the hurricane himself. Sean Farnham joins us from ESPN. Sean, first and foremost, thanks for taking some time this morning. When you talk to coaches today, are you going to get patted down for a wire throughout the course of the day?
Funny. The audio on demand segment, though, is about to just go through the roof, because I was listening, and you can download the audio on demand of each segment that you guys have. So this is going to be your all-time high. It's going to be the most entertaining segment that you have ever had on your show. The bar has been set high. So today I'm really hoping we have a lot of fun. Yeah. You know what? College basketball has been derailed a little bit, to say the least, before we start the season with this ongoing FBI investigation. A lot of today's discussion is not going to be about that. A lot of what we're doing today is going to be about trying to get sound and audio stuff that we can use throughout the course of the season on a lot of the games on Super Tuesday. I'm sure when the coaches go to their press conferences, though, they will be asked a great deal about the ongoing investigation that's going into college basketball.
Well, and quick follow-up on that, Sean. Do you think that the ongoing investigation sort of is going to play as a let's call it a dark cloud, like it sort of hovers over college basketball this year, or do you think it's sort of forgotten for people until it actually comes back out with any more news?
I think in our current news cycle, for most people, it's going to be forgotten about unless more news breaks on it, which I think there will be. But for those of us that cover the sport, this is definitely going to be a cloud that hangs over us. I think not only this season, but probably even heading into next season. You're dealing with a different animal here. I mean, look, it took 3 years for the NCAA to figure out nothing evidently went wrong at North Carolina, and $18 million were spent during the course of that investigation. Right? The FBI didn't get into this investigation to bring down, you know, a guy that worked at Adidas that gave some kid $100,000, or a couple of assistant coaches that got $15,000 on the side. When the FBI goes in on an investigation like this, they are looking to get hundreds of millions of dollars. They are looking for big ticket, especially when you look at the district that is taking care of this, the Southern District of New York. Those are guys that become attorney generals, head of FBI. So this is a case-making trial that will come out. And so they're going to take their time. They're going to be very diligent. They have the ability to do a lot more than what the NCAA would do in regards to surveillance, acquiring information. So because of that, I think that this is going to be an extremely slow process, and I think it's one that, unfortunately, we will be talking about for 2 years outside of obviously what the state of the game is overall.
So you really do the time frame is like, hey, we're just going to get like a piece of news like every 4 weeks for like the next 24 months. Like, you really think that's how it's going to play out?
I don't know if it's, you know, every couple of weeks or not. I think if it's going to play out as, okay, we're not done yet with our ongoing investigation. We're not done yet. And I think you're going to hear that a lot. Remember, they said at their last press conference that this is an ongoing investigation into college basketball. And you can see that the NCAA is trying to be proactive a little bit with the special Condoleezza Rice Council. The Pac-12 has set up a council as well to do an internal review of its conference and how it handles things. So I think, you know, again, I think change is going to come in college basketball. And from what can be seen as a very uncertain period of time for the game, I think there's still a lot of positives because change might come to the game. And that might be a good thing. At the end of the day, we might look back on this 4 or 5 years from now and be like, man, the system for college basketball is so much better than it was 5 years ago.
Well, it's hard to ask you about the state of SEC basketball without sort of looking at, hey, South Carolina involved in this, goes to a Final Four. Auburn, recruiting at a high level, looks like they got a better team this year, involved in this. Alabama's recruiting at a higher level. Missouri hires Konzo Martin and gets the number one player in the nation, recruiting at a high level. Kentucky we know about. So, like, there's a lot of positives here around the SEC from what looks like increased sort of talent and recruiting, and the league looks to be getting better, but it's like hard to ask these questions without sort of the undercurrent of what you just talked about.
Well, I think, you know, you have to take each situation individually. And I would tell you that the build-up process for the SEC has been going on now for like at least the last 3 or 4 years. because of the influx of coaches. The conference has improved so much on the coaching front that more talent is being drawn to it. The exposure that the SEC network offers, as well as obviously what ESPN is able to offer as far as Super Tuesday. Now it's on Wednesday nights this week, a couple of games on Saturday every single week. There's a great partnership there that has increased the exposure of basketball inside the SEC. When you look at a situation like Konzo Martin, the new coach at Missouri, you know, he did hire Michael Porter's dad, which also brought in Michael Porter and his younger brother, Jonte, who reclassified to join this group of players this upcoming year. Now, some people will hear that and they'll go, oh my gosh, well, obviously that can't be right. Well, his dad was already on the staff at Washington. His dad has been a coach for a long period of time, so it's not like it's out of the realm of possibility. So they go out and they get a coach. Because of that, they get a couple of players. That's often how the system works. I think when you look at it, you know, influx of guys like Avery Johnson, obviously being a point guard, being a guy that has won an NBA championship, has been coach of the year inside the NBA. When you start bringing those type of guys in, yeah, you don't have to reach to see why a point guard like Colin Sexton would want to play for a guy like Avery Johnson. So although, yes, look, anytime a top recruit signs from now until this whole thing is done, everybody's going to have questions. But what I would say is this. If you like SEC basketball, you're going to love this season because this has been a build-up process now for a couple of years where 2 years ago there was only three teams in the NCAA tournament. This year I think there could be seven teams right now that are NCAA tournament teams. So that should excite and understand that we're going to see a lot of competitive games. Teams are going to take losses. And to be honest with you, too, the top of the conference from the standpoint of Kentucky isn't as strong as what Kentucky has been over the last two seasons in particular.
So we're talking to ESPN college basketball analyst Sean Farnham. And with that being said, Sean, felt like almost two seasons last year. During the regular season, there was such a conversation about is SEC basketball any good? And then we get into the tournament, and it stands out, and all of a sudden everybody says, oh, my God, keep an eye on SEC basketball. So going into this year, where does it fall in the spectrum to you?
I think it's a top three conference in college basketball. Could be top two. That's how good I think it is because of the depth of the conference this year. I think last year, you know, here's the deal. In order to change perception of your conference, there's two things that have to happen. One is you got to win in March. That's the most important one. The SEC accomplished that. They had more NCAA tournament wins last year than any other conference in the country. Then you come back and you say, okay, now you've got a little bit of traction. Now you've got some teams that are multiple teams ranked in the top 25, up to four or five in some of the polls that I've seen early on here by the magazines and the publications. So when that happens, now you need to have a good November and December, in particular from those teams, because those are the teams that people have expectations of. But if those teams all get off to a good start, now as you get to January, the idea of a bad loss goes away. And so therefore, you're building your resume all the way through. Now that improves seeding and opportunity for a lot of teams come March. And I think that's where the SEC's got to be focused right now, is coming out of gates fast, having teams avoid some of those bad losses in order to have long-term success and be ready for March.
Obviously, I'm assuming that when the media vote comes out that the Kentucky Wildcats will be picked. They are even younger, which is hard to believe, than maybe ever before. Again, very hard to believe. Who are the top challengers there? I love A&M and what they've got. Florida, certainly. Who are the top challengers to Kentucky that maybe we don't see coming?
Well, you just hit on both of them. In fact, in my media poll, I did not have Kentucky winning the conference.
Ooh.
So I had Texas A&M winning the conference, and a big part of that is because of experience. And they're a team that a lot of people aren't going to remember from last year, and a big part of that was point guard play. They turned the ball over 23% of their possessions on the season. They had a lot of two- or three-possession games where they lost that are going to turn around this year. J.J. Caldwell is a very talented point guard, unfortunately suspended for the first five games of the regular season, so you're not going to get a good sense really until late November, probably middle of December, of what this team's going to look like. But when you return a guy like Robert Williams, who could have been a late lottery pick to early 20s in the first round of the NBA draft last year, and he comes back to campus, and then you still remain with guys like Tyler Davis, who was there for that Sweet 16 run and is a heck of a college basketball player, DJ Hogue, who can really shoot the ball, Admon Gilder moving back to a position that he's more comfortable in as a two-guard versus having to be a lead point guard. You've got a transfer from Marquette and Wilson. You've got a young freshman that's 6'7", that's a top 100 kid in Savion Flagg. I really think that they're going to be a team that is going to be able to compete all the way through. And because of their experience, I would give them an edge over Kentucky right now. That doesn't mean that Kentucky's not going to be there at the end of the season. It just means that right now, in my eyes, when I look long-term, I put a little bit more of an emphasis on experience. And I think it's the same thing when you look at Florida a little bit with Chioza and Kayvon Allen, who's the best scorer returning in the SEC. And then you add in a John Igbunu, who's supposed to be back in January from his knee injury that he suffered towards the end of last season. They've got a top 100 class. They also have another kid out until January with a knee injury, Isaiah Stokes, who was a top 100 kid. But I like their experience. And I think when you look at recent history in the NCAA tournament, in particular at Final Fours as well, there's not a lot of one-and-dones. Last year there were 2 one-and-dones in the entire Final Four, and neither one of them started, and neither one of them were expected to be one-and-dones when the season started. That's Zach Collins from Gonzaga and Tony Bradley from North Carolina.
So, Sean, I know we got to let you go, but real quick, what are your thoughts?
You don't have to. Well, I can stay with you.
You want to stick around another segment?
Why not? Like, if you want me, I'm here. I mean, we haven't even talked about Kenny Chesney yet. We haven't talked about...
No, we don't want you. Never mind. Just kidding. Don't want you.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, if he has a Zeke Elliott take, I'd like to hear that.
Yeah, Sean.
Okay, Julian wants to hear your Zeke Elliott take, so...
All right. I am somewhat puzzled because I have him on my fantasy team, so he's out of the lineup, he's in the lineup, he's out of the lineup, he's in the lineup. These are the things that matter most to me. I know he hasn't rushed the ball as well as he had a season ago, and his numbers are down, but quite frankly, I need him for my fantasy football team right now, and my team is 2-4. I got Amari Cooper, who hasn't done anything, Derek Carr, who's far below par right now, so I need somebody to spark my team. So if I can squeeze an extra week or two before the suspension goes in, I'm taking it. I need some dubs. That's what I need right now.
Sounds like you need to quit fantasy football is what it sounds like you need to do.
I'm addicted to it. It's a family league. Do you know how much trash is spoken in the Farnham family fantasy football league? It is ridiculous.
Guys, follow him on Twitter, at Sean Farnham. Sean, always keeping the tractor sexy, my friend. We appreciate your time this morning. You like that Kenny Chesney reference? I got that in for you.
Yes. And by the way, do you know I went and got a workout in this morning just to make sure my tractor is extra tight for media day today?
It always is, my friend.
I have no desire to ever hear anything about your tractor ever again.
Follow him on Twitter. Sean, thanks for taking the time, man. Enjoy Nashville.
All right, fellas. Have a great show.
What the hell just happened?
Tractor sexy talk. That's what happened. We'll
it's
break
a good
down...
basketball league, folks. Yeah, it's a good league.
It is a good basketball league. We'll tell you a little bit more about it. And also, while we're on college sports, there's a college football playoff chaos theory you have to hear. It will make your brains explode as SEC fans. We'll do all that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Council producing. It's Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Sean Farnham, just always a blast. You know, nobody can get weird and funny faster than Sean Farnham, so says I. So great stuff from Sean. I was a little surprised, and we're going to get to a college football playoff theory in just 1 second. I was surprised. He had one thing to say. And I know that this, Julian, last year you spent a lot of the season reminding us all that SEC basketball at its best was a subpar product. He has now said that it may be the second best conference in all of college basketball.
Yeah, that's alarming.
I mean, that's a big statement.
I can't
right?
agree with that, but they are improved, and that is going to be fun. Texas A&M is going to be good. Alabama and Auburn could both be good. Vanderbilt has a shot with some young kids to be pretty good. Florida, Kentucky, both going to be good. Georgia's got a star. Tennessee, okay. Draw the line there. Yeah, that's where I'll draw the line. So.
Julian, can anything be said at this point that changes your mind about SEC basketball, or are you totally counseled in on this 100%?
It's definitely inferior to ACC basketball.
It's going to be funny, man. If SEC basketball is one of the top 2-3 conferences in college basketball, it's going to be a really down year in college basketball.
Is that because at least 40 coaches will get fired?
Sure, if you want to keep bringing that up, I guess.
Julian will be –
even though it has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Well, it'll have everything to do with what we're talking about if half of the sport loses its job in the next 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, I think what would be best for college basketball is, like in an ideal world, whatever comes down either very quickly or after the season.
Because no, I agree.
For the sport itself, to be able to avoid the distraction at some point – will be a win. Speaking of distraction, there's going to be a huge distraction as the playoff rankings come out in a couple of weeks and everybody's going to have their eyeballs on it. And there are some chaotic theories out there that we've talked about a little bit in the past, but there are viable, I don't want to say like, okay, this is, the, you know, sure, anything can happen. There are viable theories out there that could result in, for example, two SEC teams making the playoffs. But there's also viable theories that could have plenty of conference champions not making the playoffs.
Yeah, there's one. Somebody on Twitter asked me yesterday, what happens, and this is sort of convoluted, so stay with me here. Somebody asked me yesterday, what happens if TCU, Ohio State, Georgia, and Notre Dame all run the table? And that wouldn't include Bama. That wouldn't include a Pac-12 champion. Like, what happens then? And you're going, oh, my God, I have no idea. I have no idea. I think an SEC champion probably gets in. Notre Dame has an unbelievably difficult schedule down the stretch, and ironically, they're actually underrated this year. Most of the time, people scream and yell about how they're overrated. I think they're actually underrated right now. So I don't know. You still have the Big Ten round robin with Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, and Ohio State, almost all still left to play with the exception of Michigan, Michigan State. So there's just a ton of – I just think that we're in the middle – you said chaos. I think that's the right word. I think we're in the middle of another 2007-ish season with the exception of Bama. I still think Bama's going to be at the top of the whole thing before it's all said and done. They will have to play, of course, Auburn and then maybe Georgia. That's going to be a really brutal two-game stretch for them. But they're still Alabama. But I don't think – the more and more I get further removed from 2007, if you'll remember, that was the year Kentucky was in the top five, South Florida was in the top five. You had Missouri and West Virginia in the top five, these non-powerful brands. And then LSU, the only two-loss champion in the history of college football. There's a lot of people that love that as it happened. I'm not sure it's good for the sport. I'm not sure it's good for the sport to see South Florida and Kentucky in the top five. No disrespect to those two programs specifically. I just don't think it's good for the sport to have a bunch of two-loss teams getting into the playoff and a bunch of three-loss teams being in the conversation. I want to see, like in the NCAA tournament, I love Cinderella on the first weekend. And maybe in the Sweet 16. But by the time I get to the Elite Eight, I want Kansas versus North Carolina. I want, you know, Duke versus Michigan State. I want the best of the best playing at the highest level. So I don't know if the chaos of 2007 is good for the sport or not. It's great for Saturdays. I don't know if it's great for the playoff. So I think there's a difference there. And two SEC teams getting in would, of course, cause complete chaos in everybody else's league. To which I would say, don't lose two or three times and win your champion. Like, go out and win games. If TCU wants to make it, just go win your games. And TCU will get in. Because I don't think all those teams can go undefeated. I think everybody's going to lose a bunch of games from here on out.
Well, Heather Dinitz, college football reporter, was on 3D yesterday doing spectacular work, as she always does. This is what she said about two teams making it from the SEC.
It wouldn't surprise me if those two teams finished in the committee's top four. If it's an instant classic and Georgia takes Alabama down to the wire and there's just it's really hard for them to leave them out. But the thing is it depends, again, on what happens in the other Power 5 conferences. Is Georgia then going up against a Pac-12 champ in Washington or Washington State? Then it probably does make sense to put them in, right? Because they beat Notre Dame, and what did the Pac-12 champ do? Ohio State, they lost their only non-conference game that mattered. So when you start comparing resumes like that, that's what you have to look at. But I do think that Alabama and Georgia could both get in there.
Which would be, in and of itself, like multiple SEC teams getting in or no SEC teams getting in are the two things that will make everybody scream from the top of their at the top of their lungs.
And I don't think there's even a chance that no SEC team gets in. And I would actually argue I don't think there's a chance both of them get in. I think Georgia's going to go down to Auburn and really struggle in that game. I think that they're going to ask, you know, I think Kevin Steele and Auburn's defense is really going to ask Jake Fromm to beat them and have the quarterback beat them. And I don't know if that's going to happen down in the Plains. I think Auburn can still beat Georgia and sort of throw a wrench into that theory. That means then the winner of the SEC championship game is the only team that really gets in. And frankly, I don't see Bama losing outside of maybe the Auburn game. So in theory, much like Ohio State last year, if they lose to Auburn and a two-loss Auburn team goes to the SEC championship game and wins, they may not be good enough to get in based on resume. But Alabama will be sitting there at 11-1, just like Ohio State was last year, and probably slip into the playoffs. So I don't think you're in danger of not making the playoff with as good a teams as they have at the top right now. I still think Georgia, while they're going to have a really good year and they're a great team, I don't think they're nearly as good as Alabama, and I think they could absolutely go down to Auburn and lose. So it's hard to see 12-0 versus 12-0. In Atlanta. That's just hard to see because it's just really tough to do that. And I don't think it's ever happened. 08? I want to say 08 it was close, and maybe that's the only other time it's happened. I don't think we've had undefeated teams in the SEC championship game other than that. So it's really hard to see that. But you're right, heads would explode if two SEC teams gets in and nobody else gets in. But like I said, there's a lot of losing left to do in every league, and that could lead to craziness.
Well, we'll get the thoughts from Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football from SEC Networks. We'll get Tony's thoughts on it next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Talking about all the chaotic theories that are out there as the College Football Playoff Committee gets closer and closer to letting us know how they feel about
less
the college
football
season.
Less than 2 weeks, baby.
Everybody's sort of counting down the time. One thing we know at this point is that the Vols won't be a factor in it, but the SEC will. So to help us figure out exactly what that looks like, and what the SEC looks like as a whole, Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football from the SEC Network, joins us. And Tony, let's start with these sort of chaotic theories that are out there. Do you buy that this is a year where there could be two SEC teams in the college football playoff?
Possible, but not likely. I mean, the one scenario where it could possibly happen is if Alabama runs the table and Georgia runs the table, Penn State loses, which I think is, given the stretch they've got coming up, is certainly possible, and that Alabama and Georgia are 1-2 on championship Saturday. Then, if it's a great game, then maybe the loser doesn't drop below 4. I think that is a possibility, but again, not very likely. The other thing you got to keep in mind is there a 12-1 conference champion out there from one of the major conferences that wouldn't get in because they put a second SEC team in? I don't think that's very likely.
Yeah, a lot of two-loss champions, I think, would have to happen.
That's the ticket. You got, you know, yeah. Pac-12 would have to have two, Big 12 would have to have two, and
Notre Dame.
I just don't think the committee would do it, right, quite honestly.
And Notre Dame's a big factor in this. Notre Dame's got four really big games coming up on the schedule.
Sure.
Notre Dame could be a big factor in all this as well.
What if Georgia's sitting there at number two and Notre Dame's only loss was 20-19 at home against Georgia? I mean, you got and look at who Notre Dame will have beaten.
And what's funny is, and this is going really deep in the scheduling weeds here, but Notre Dame could beat USC and NC State, and then those two teams could go on to win their championships with two losses. So that's neither here nor there, Tony. We'll get to the more pressing stuff. And what I'm fascinated by is already I'm getting a ton of stuff on Twitter. I'm sure you do, about most deserving and resume and body of work and all this stuff. And like TCU's this and Wisconsin's strength to schedule that and all this other stuff. My question is, the committee's job is four best teams, and best is really eye of the beholder. It's sort of however you may define it if you're on that committee, and we don't really have a magic elixir or formula from the committee through 3 years of data that says this is what it's supposed to look like. We sort of still don't know, right?
Well, you're not going to get we weight the strength of schedule 30%, and we do the eye test 40%. No. It's all those things. It's what you think the best teams are based on, yes, the eye test, and based on their body of work. It's both. It's not one or the other. And you put all those things into the hopper, and you come out with the four teams that you're gonna pick. So yeah, there is no magic formula. It's different for everybody on the committee.
We're talking to Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart. So with that being said, do you trust the committee to continue to get it right?
Sure. Sure, absolutely. Having said that, I disagreed with the committee last year when they put Ohio State in ahead of Penn State. I thought the conference championship and the head-to-head win by Penn State of Ohio State compensated for the fact that Penn State had one extra loss. The people on the committee, those who voted for Ohio State, looked at Ohio State and said, I know all that's true, but I'm looking at Ohio State and they're just better. Well, I don't happen to agree with that now, but still, I like what the work the committee does. I just happen to disagree with that decision.
Tony Barnhart joining us here, and when you look at 2007, it keeps coming to mind. We talked a lot in the summertime. You know, hey, this could be sort of this feels like 2007. Mm-hmm. It only feels like there's one or two great teams, and certainly it looks like Alabama and maybe Clemson, if they get Kelly Bryant back, are the only two great teams potentially in college football. Is a 2007 type of year, where you have a bunch of two-loss teams making the playoff, and you got a bunch of smaller brands making a run up there, like we had Kentucky, South Florida, Missouri, West Virginia, all those smaller-ish brands. Is that good for the sport, or is that bad for the sport?
Oh, it's great for the sport. Are you kidding? 2007 was incredible for the sport. I mean, there were like seven number two teams that lost the week after they were put number two on Championship Saturday. Number one and number two lost. I mean, it was incredible. So yeah, listen, to me, the more chaos, the better. I mean, last week was incredible, and I think what we saw last week is just a taste of what we're going to get in the second half of the year.
We're talking to Tony Barnhart. You mentioned chaos. Obviously, chaos describes what's happening for the Vols right now. If you were the athletic director there, would Butch Jones still be your coach today?
Well, first of all, one thing I do not do is I do not call for coaches to be fired. What I will say is, based on what I've seen and based on what I've heard and the people that I've talked to, it is hard for me to see a road back. Now, as we all know, redemption is always just one week away in this sport. I mean, if you win this week, you're a genius. If you lose next week, you're stupid and no good. If Tennessee were to find a way to beat Alabama, which none of us believe that's going to happen. Yeah, I mean, Alabama's just too good. Then maybe that changes the dynamic. But save that, I don't see a road back for Butch Jones at Tennessee.
Is Georgia good enough to beat Auburn and Alabama?
Yeah, I think that's the big question. Georgia is a good team. Whether or not they're a very good team, I don't know. Now, they've got all the elements. Here's what we don't know about Georgia. What is going to happen when a very good defense, like Auburn's, puts eight guys in the box and says, you know what, you may beat me today, but you're not going to beat me with Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. Your quarterback's going to have to beat me. And thus far, Jake Fromm has not been asked to do that. What will happen if he is asked to do that? Very talented, very smart, but that has not happened yet. To me, that's the great unknown about Georgia.
So you mentioned earlier, Tony, the road to redemption. I'm trying to find the road to redemption for the Vandy football program at this point. It's obviously reeling. Do you think they can turn it around this season?
Yeah, listen, Vanderbilt's a tired team. You can watch them play. I mean, think of what they've done. For the first time in school history, they played four ranked teams in a row, all right? You know, beat Kansas State, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, and Ole Miss on the road. That, you know, I picked Vanderbilt to win. That was not a good pick on my part because you could look at Vanderbilt until they tired. I think they can regroup. I still like the Vanderbilt team, but this has been a very, very difficult stretch for them.
It's fantastic stuff. You guys can follow him on Twitter, obviously, at Mr. CFB, Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart from the SEC Network. Tony, we appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Tony.
Okay, guys.
Great stuff from Tony.
You know, he mentioned something. We talk about Vanderbilt. That's a really interesting point that they can rebound. And with Kentucky and South Carolina and Tennessee and Vanderbilt, and I think it ties into the 2007 discussion about chaos and is it good or bad for the sport. I think 2007 was great on Saturdays for the sport. Like, week in and week out, it led to complete chaos, and it was really entertaining. But it led to the worst champion we've ever had. It led to weaker teams competing for the national championship, and I think that's bad for the sport. So I think it's good and bad. But the SEC East is sort of a microcosm of that, right? Like, we look at the SEC East, and everybody outside the oh, it's terrible, it's garbage, it's bad, down year, Georgia's good, and everybody else sucks. Well, if you look at it, and you're like, think about it, take the coaching drama out of it, right? And just say Tennessee, Kentucky, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, and even Florida. There's going to be a lot of really dramatic football games in the second half of the season between all five of those teams. It's going to be really chaotic and really fun to watch. It doesn't mean that any of it's really good for the sport, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that you got bad football teams that are going to play exciting football games because it's too equally.
They're all average. Yeah. They're all mediocre to bad.
And you know, I look at it again. To me, the discussion of what's good for the sport is a lot like the college basketball discussion that we've had before. And to me, like, I never look back and say, well, was that Super Bowl champion really the best? I don't care about that. Like, I care about – I want the chaos all the time. So – you know that, like, when it comes to the college football playoff, I don't care if the best team – I mean, the best team this year has been Alabama. I do not want them to win the national championship. I think it's more interesting when they don't. So,
And I agree with you. I think it's also – I also think it's okay to want different things for the NFL than for college football.
Sure.
Like, I the NFL system is designed to get the 12 teams into the playoff, and then all hell can break loose then, right? Like, that's when their chaos happens, is in the playoff. You never know who's going to win or lose, and that's sort of the way they do it, and it's great the way they do it. We love the way it's not always one versus one. You know, you don't always get Denver versus Carolina, like the one seeds or whatever, and that's awesome. In college football, because it's only four out of 130, what I don't want to see is a three-loss Oklahoma team who's clearly proven they're not one of the best three or four teams in college football somehow sneak in because there's so much bad football that a 9-3 or a 10-3 or a – I don't want to see a bunch of two- or three-loss teams being competing for that four spot, because at that point it's sort of like the SEC East. You've got a lot of drama and excitement, but it's not really high-level football. And I'm hopeful for is – a really good Big Ten champion, a really good SEC champion, which I think we're going to get. And then whether it's Notre Dame or a Pac-12 team or Clemson, really good football teams to make that playoff. And I still think we got that shot. I still think we can get Penn State, Clemson, Alabama, and Notre Dame or whatever. I still think we can get some really good teams. I just see a lot of losses left for everybody except for really Alabama. And at that point, you know, I still think we're all chasing Alabama right now. I still think they're far and away better than everybody else.
To me, I like with college football, I like it the same way I like my movies. Like, there's a point where sometimes I like to watch a really heady indie movie. I watch a lot of those. But at the same time, I like the Fast and the Furious.
Christmas party.
Right. And so there's a point to me where if I could see a three-loss Baker Mayfield go in and beat Alabama for a national championship, I would take that all day. I think that would be amazing for the sport. So that's.
I want to know if you could pick one matchup for the national championship. What would be the most intriguing for you right now today against Bama?
It'd be Oklahoma. I think Baker
really?
Mayfield. Yeah, just because Baker Mayfield is fun to watch. Like, that's.
Can I give you mine?
Yeah.
After the break.
Yeah, we'll do that after the break. We'll do that when we come back. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Braden and Fitz. Coming at you live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc., Mount Juliet. All this college football talk. You don't want to miss UT Watch Party at Beyond the Edge in East Nashville. Starts at 2 p.m. Saturday, Beyond the Edge. What's that address? 112 South 11th Street? 112 South
11th? It's kind of tricky to say.
112
South 11th Street. I just say right off of Five Points. If you know where Five Points is, which most people do, it's just right there. It's like 100 feet.
Yeah. Just go to Five Points and then
or meters if you're into the metric system.
If you go to Five Points and scream Marco, somebody at Beyond the Edge will scream Polo back to you.
There's a possibility.
And you can find whatever you want. Tennessee Vols take on Top Rank. Bama, always going to be a good time there, right?
Plenty of adult beverages to drown your sorrows if you're a Tennessee fan, or celebrate if you're an Alabama fan or a Vandy fan or a Georgia fan or a Florida fan who loves watching Tennessee burn to the ground.
Right.
All of those things, you can celebrate all of those things together. Beyond the Edge is bringing college football fans together. That's really what it is. They got great patios, lots of TVs, lots of big games. So it should be a lot of fun this weekend. As usual, at Beyond the Edge, East Nashville, your home for Tennessee and SEC football watch party.
So you asked me earlier if I could have any matchup for Alabama. And that would be Baker Mayfield. But that would not be if I could pick any matchup in the world for a national championship, it wouldn't involve Alabama at all. But if I'm going to pick
one. Okay, what would it be, you think?
Right now, I would lean.
Because they're going to be there.
Yeah,
I hate to
right now, I would lean Penn State versus just to see James Franklin versus Baker Mayfield. I would
Penn State, Oklahoma.
Yeah, Penn State, Oklahoma.
Okay, two big power brands, two really talented teams, probably your top two Heisman candidates right now. And if anyone in this city has never heard of Bryce Love, you better act somebody, because that dude is a monster for Stanford. He's right there tied with Barkley for the Heisman lead. I could see that.
A lot of trash talking in that one. There'd be a lot of trash talking.
I think so as well with James Franklin and Baker Mayfield. I don't think Oklahoma's defense is good enough to get him there. That's my concern. But I agree. A Baker Mayfield-led offense would be a – if they could be competitive like they were against Ohio State and win a game, like if they could be in that situation again, I think that's a big sell to fans. That would be a very entertaining product. But I do think Alabama is almost – I mean, I still think we're headed towards a three-peat. I think Clemson's going to win out, and I think we're headed towards a potential rubber match. But if you told me, like, at the beginning of the year, what matchup would I want, I'd want Harbaugh versus Saban. It's Big Ten. It's SEC. It's two coaches that clearly hate each other. It's like the two of the biggest brands in the history of college football going head-to-head. Michigan just isn't good enough on offense to get there. So I have sort of reverted to I want to see Alabama and Penn State, because I want to see James Franklin, the big cult of personality. They've got the most balanced team that could really give Alabama a challenge. I think they're one of the few teams that could actually give Alabama a challenge, even though I would pick Alabama to win that game. but I want to see James Franklin take an iconic player in Saquon Barkley, a star player who's going to be a top five NFL draft pick, and him against Nick Saban's game plan to stop him. That's what I find really interesting. Just like Baker Mayfield, I find that
really
interesting.
How do you
really
find that interesting? What do Leonard you mean? Fournette couldn't even run against Bama. What makes you think Saquon Barkley is going to have any
success?
Penn
State has a football coach? I don't know.
Well,
does that count?
I mean, sure, but
they've got
like,
a quarterback. They've got an offense.
A good running back against a defense has never worked.
But look at how Barkley's used. He's returning kicks. He's catching passes. He's the all-around superstar right now. And I think that the press conferences alone between James Franklin and Nick Saban would be spectacular. So to me, it's 100,000 seats in both stadiums. Like the brands are huge. I think Penn State and Alabama, even just visually on the field, the uniforms would look great against each other. I just think I think the ratings would be through the roof for any of the Big Ten Alabama matchups. Ohio State Alabama would be a huge ratings grab. Penn State Alabama, huge ratings grab. Notre Dame Alabama would be a huge ratings grab. The problem is we just saw that and they got destroyed.
Right.
So I think Penn State, which we have not seen in this situation in 20 years, they have not been in this national title conversation since 93, really. It would be awesome to see that, and I think there'd be so many people that hate James Franklin and so many people that hate Alabama. Like, people wouldn't know what to do. And I think there'd be a lot of draw there and a lot of intrigue.
The only unfortunate thing is that, and I won't say unfortunate, the only side of that, there's a part of me that is always going to look at Penn State sports in general that's what everybody's going to do. I mean, a national title game, it's going to re-spark the conversation of should they even be allowed to play football. And to which I would say, no, I would have given that program the death penalty, but that wasn't an option. So if the NCAA chose not to do that, or if that didn't happen, however that could have happened, then, at some point they're playing. So you can't do anything about that. But that would be a huge part of the national conversation going into that game.
What I wouldn't like about that would be, the redemptions. Like, there'd be stories about how Penn State has evolved and moved on. And they have done an unbelievable job. And this is, on a very serious note, they have actually done a lot of things to really change and affect the community on campus and in Happy Valley, which is a bigger city than people think. To truly go out and obviously you guys know me, I work for a child sexual abuse charity. So this obviously hits very close to home for me, and it should for everybody. But they've gone out and sort of walked the walk for changing their community. They've done a great job at all that stuff. But you're right, it wouldn't feel great to see the redemption story of Penn State and coming back from it. And you're kind of like, that doesn't feel right.
So you're going
to get it would 50-50. Have to be done in the right way.
The ESPNs of the world are going to give you the redemption stories. The news outlets are going to give you the how is this? This shows you everything that's wrong with college sports. It's going to be lumped into the conversation would take a very dark turn if Penn State goes to a national title game.
Do you want to see any of that other stuff, though, over Clemson and Alabama? Because Alabama's obviously – let's just assume Alabama gets there for the sake of this conversation. USC-Alabama? That's pretty juicy.
Yeah.
That's pretty juicy.
I'd rather see Notre Dame-USC.
TCU-Alabama? Not going to get ratings.
No.
Wisconsin-Alabama? Not going to get ratings. Stanford-Alabama? Not going to get ratings.
No.
Clemson, I think, gets you ratings.
Probably. I mean, Clemson-Bama 3 would get you.
And then I'd be done with it. I'd be like, all right, no more Clemson and Alabama.
I'm already done with Clemson and Alabama. But
they were two of the greatest games we've ever seen, though.
Yeah, but I'm just squarely on the – I'm so bored with Alabama going to the national title game every year. I'm bored with it. I'd rather see Clemson v. anybody.
What you need to do then is buy a bunch of Facebook ads to get Nick Saban fired.
Yeah, okay. I'll try that. Let's see how that works.
To retire for this to happen. Like, for Alabama, they are even today, their talent and their roster is so far and away better than everybody else. And there's just nothing like Julian said, when's the last time you watched a full Alabama game? Because it's just boring.
It's not fun.
It's not fun anymore. So I'm with you that I'm kind of tired of it, but until Nick Saban retires, I don't think we've got a choice, and that's unfortunately where we're at with Alabama.
Well, that situation, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. By the way, it's always interesting to see how Xfinity plays out. You can't go wrong if you go with Xfinity Wi-Fi. They have a network of hotspots, keeps you connected to the internet around town at Wi-Fi level speeds. Access to the hotspots, no additional charge to all Xfinity mobile customers, as well as Xfinity internet customers who subscribe to packages that include speeds of 25 megabits or higher. Currently, more than 18 million hotspots nationwide. So you can download the app, and it helps you find the hotspots. All of a sudden, you're saving money on your wireless data plan because you're connecting to Xfinity Wi-Fi hotspots to stream the content you love. Got them all over the country. Got an offer that ends for you November 22nd, 2017. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Here's what you need to do. Get started with Xfinity Internet for just $19.99 a month for 12 months. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit an Xfinity store for more details or to learn more about other Xfinity Internet offers. You can get out there and check out Xfinity. When we come back, it's a Wednesday. It's 9 a.m. You know what that means. Midweek mock. We'll do all that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.